evening. Thanks for being with us. We're just firing up the live chat for the night. Sweetheart, do you have your cell phone with you? If you have any questions when you're on the phone, you can text Ramona. We sort of get reception down here, 801-554-7308, 554-7308, if you would like to send us a text, and we'll do our very best to respond. We just got a cell phone booster for this part of our house, but it's not installed yet, so hopefully that will be available here shortly. Okay, we're just about ready to get started. Okay, we're starting up the broadcast. We've got good sound. We're broadcasting. And we are recording, and welcome to the Tuesday night celebration of life. It's good to have you with us, both here live on the video stream and also on the telephone. If you're on the telephone, you'd like to send a question, feel free to text to 801-554-7308 or 801-541-9181. That's 801-541-9181 if you're on the telephone and you'd like to submit a question. If you're live on the video and you've got a Ustream account, you can ask the question right here on the live chat, and I'll do my very best to respond to you. So thank you and welcome. It would be wonderful to hear from someone who's on the live video, that they're able to see everything okay. So if you're on the live video with us tonight, could you just send us a quick text to 801-541-9181 to make sure that everything is going well. It's good to be with you. Hopefully we've got good sound, etc. We want to welcome those who are visiting with us tonight for the first time. Each Tuesday night we get together to celebrate life, to talk about principles that impact success, impact joy in the journey, impact our ability to connect with other people. Last week, we started the six qualities of an intentional creator. We just barely got started. The first quality is called connection with people. These are the principles and practices to assist us in more effectively connecting and taking down walls of resistance, creating a safe place, and unleashing a huge reserve of cooperation and productivity. The scroll that is attached to this particular quality is scroll number 2. I'll greet this day with love in my heart. I'd like to spend just a moment on that scroll for those of you who are studying it. This scroll was the only scroll that Betty asked Og to amend after the one-night marathon in which all 10 scrolls were written. It was a little complicated for 1968. Let me add just a little bit of that complication back so that we can go a little deeper and richer in the meaning. When Og says, I'll greet this day with love in my heart, for this is the greatest secret of success in all ventures, Og was talking about a very specific kind of love. The Greeks called it agape. It wasn't eros, pia, philo, agape. Philo, it wasn't erotic or maternal or brotherly love. Agape love is a heightened level of awareness. It's our ability to step back and see someone unconditionally, see their pricelessness and their uniqueness. When we see somebody from this vantage point, we're able to take down walls of resistance. Og says, muscle can split a shield and even destroy life. But only the unseen power of love, this agape love, only this will open the hearts of men. And until I master this art, and we're going to be talking about this art tonight, I am no more than a peddler in the marketplace. And we don't want to be peddlers in the marketplace. He says, this could be my greatest weapon. And none on whom I call can defend against its force. Well, let's spend some time reviewing just for a moment the beginning principles in this quality, connection with people. The first principle is the fact that we all have walls of resistance. And many of us, in our excitement, when we want to share something, we just throw up all over somebody's wall. We might also, in our frustration, attempt to break it down as if we were wielding a sledgehammer. We know that when we throw up on a wall, it just splashes back on us. It tastes terrible. It's called rejection. It's not really the person rejecting you. It's their wall of resistance, as Og said, which they built around their hearts because of hate and suspicion. And our role is to take down those walls and build a bridge so that our love can enter their soul. So everybody's got a wall of resistance. Dr. Hartman, who did the mathematics for our assessment, was able to measure that on average, in a non-adversarial role, that's two friends, companions, two coworkers that work together nicely, that even then, a person holds back, on average, 40%. Think about that. That's almost half. 40% of a person's cooperation and productivity. That's an enormous loss. In America, and I mentioned this last week, and I'll emphasize it again, where we suck the humanity out of people and treat them as assets and objects and resources, unfortunately, we are robbing ourselves of that 40 or 50 or higher percent of cooperation and productivity. So important that we learn how to value people. When a person feels understood, when a person feels valued, they feel safe. Those walls can come down. That cooperation can flood out. So we know we have a wall. It's not an option. We don't get to vote on walls. People just have them. And we can be frustrated by them, or we can learn the principles for taking them down. Well, the tools that we'll use are empathy and intuition. Intuition is our inner sense of knowing. Our empathy is based on all of our life experiences. I shared briefly last week the Chicago Dream, teaching us to take all of those things we've been dragging behind us in that sack. And one of your assignments this week was to identify what was in your sack. Did you find some of those things? Those things we just drag around and, oh, this is so hard and difficult. Well, while we're dragging them around, we're victims. It's draining us, and it's draining everyone else around us. When we empty that sack and we take those things that are in that sack, those challenges, frustrations, failures, disappointments, even harm that's been done to us, and we ask ourselves, I wonder if anybody else is experiencing this. I'm going to take this, and I'm going to engrave it on my heart so that it's available. So as I'm stepping into someone's world and listening to them, I can hear things differently from a frame of mind, my own experience, my own empathy. Character, your character, my character, was forged in the furnace of adversity. Many of you have some very painful things in that sack, memories, disappointments, discouragements. Our character has been forged in a furnace. We know what pain feels like. We can't take it back. Can't change history. It's already happened. Be nice if we could, but we can't. However, we can use these experiences as a rich resource to more effectively connect with, talk to, ask questions, to connect with another person. And when we do this, their walls come down. That flood of cooperation and productivity comes washing over us. And there is finally purpose in our suffering. There is joy in our journey. And there is much healing in our souls. I would admonish all on the phone and all who are watching tonight, let's keep examining that sack, because that which we have been dragging around behind us, those things we wish happened to someone else, somewhere else, not us, are in fact your greatest asset. Your single greatest asset. They have uniquely prepared you for this moment in time to serve other people. How exciting. Well, then we moved into the seven principles of intrinsic validation. The first one we talked about was noticing what's important to another person. This is about the process of noticing other human beings. Sometimes we're so swamped in our own stuff that we don't truly see others. So the invitation is to begin the process by noticing. Noticing what they're doing. Noticing how they look. Noticing what they have. And then principle number two, verbalizing it. And those are separated because we see more than we verbalize. But let us first see. That gets us outside of ourselves. Then let us speak what we see. People love it when we notice them, what's important to them. And I've shared several stories that are in the material. You can go back and listen to those to assist you in getting ideas of the kinds of situations that you can be in. I also admonished you to play a game called Red Flags, Green Flags. Remember that assignment? For the last week, your assignment was to look at what's important to another person. When they do something good, those are green flags. Those are the positives. And whenever you see a red flag, that's something negative. That's when your child cleans up the room and leaves a sock on the floor. Or they don't make their bed perfectly. Or they wash the car and leave a little spot untouched. We don't notice those things. We notice what's good, what's important to them. That's red flags, green flags. Did anybody discover what I discovered when I started practicing Ogg's admonition silently and to yourself? When you meet someone, you say, "I love you." Anybody try that? Did we look for those green flags? Did anybody discover that they are just a little judgmental? Anybody? What a great discovery. Because when we know that we have been, it will help explain why we might be having some challenges in our life. People know. You know. You know when someone is judging you. And others know when we are judging them. So keep practicing those red flags, green flags. Look for the green. You might have a voice that says, "Oh, my day, there's so much red." Well, there is red if we're looking for it. Let us balance it with the good. It's very healthy. Well, once we've been through this process, we started to get into this portion last week. It's called listening for doors. This is a shift from noticing people to actually caring about people. So we're now going to go to a graduate level of connection, listening for doors. A door is a verbal hint about what someone is thinking. If you listen closely, you'll hear doors everywhere. Some of them are very simple. "I'm really tired. Oh, it's been a rough day at the office. Oh, might be a child. It says, 'I hate my English teacher.'" Just think about how we normally respond. We listen generally only long enough to fix, to justify, to defend, to explain, to comment, to get our opinion in, whatever it might be. In this exercise, listening for doors, we're going to start to listen to understand. Stephen Covey talks about this in the Seven Habits of Highly Effective People. First, listen to understand. So we listen for those doors. Now, based on your unique life experiences, those things that you used to drag around in your sack that you're now carrying in your heart, you can hear things differently. Listen, trust your intuition. I wonder if. And so we can ask a question. Share with me a little bit more about that comment you made about XYZ. help me understand this a little better. Or simply, I'm listening. So we're listening for a door. Just to picture yourself. Here you are. You cross the bridge. You're standing in front of somebody's brick wall, their rock wall, and a door opens. They give you a verbal hint. What are we going to do? Are we going to just react and have them shut the door? Or are we going to step into the door? Oh, tell me more about that. Share with me what you're thinking. Could you say a little bit more about that? I'm listening. Just lean into the conversation. For those who are watching on the video, just watch. I'm just leaning into the conversation. The message in my body, the tone of my voice, and my question is, I care enough about you to hear what's important to you. Can you feel it? You'll want to even be conscious with the tone of your voice. Can you hear the tone of my voice? I want to be safe. What does safe sound like? Practice. You're not being manipulative. You're being aware of how your voice might impact another person. Does your voice feel and sound safe? Practice. Practice being safe. Now, warning, some of these doors can be really caustic, hurtful, harmful, nasty comments. Seldom are they really directed at us. They're just out of anger, frustration, somebody just lashing back. How could you ever do that? Everybody knows that's a scam. And we want to get defensive. We want to fix it. We want to justify it. But now we're going to just be listening. We want to understand. Wow, be curious. That's the word we want to use. Be curious. I wonder why they feel that way. You see, it's not about us. It's not about us. We have left our baggage and our agenda at the door. When we chose to step in, we are totally making it about them. So we leave that at the door. We step in. And once we're in, we want to begin to listen. We're making it about them. And we're curious. We're curious. We really are interested. Now, at first, this may be a strange place, may be uncomfortable. This may be a muscle we haven't exercised a great deal. I know guys are sometimes accused of being less than sensitive, that sometimes we're not good listeners and we just want to fix everything. Well, if that's the case, we get to now change. We get to be very rare, because the minute you step into that world, you have become extremely rare. Very rare. Now you're inside their world. Once we're inside, we want to go to principle number 4. Now it's time to create a safe place. We want the walls to come down. We want to be included in their inner circle. Again, we're not manipulating. We're actually caring. You can tell you can't play this game. You actually... Excuse me. We do have to... Excuse me. Ramona prepared a great dinner. Thank you, sweetheart. We do really have to care about the people. And so we step into the world. And this is where our empathy comes alive. This is where we begin to listen, to understand. Now, the brain is built to do this. That's what's so strange. We live in a society where we're so disconnected, but our brain is built for this connection. Right there in our prefrontal cortex, they call it the brain-bone barrier. We can actually pierce it. While we're listening, our mind is going back into the recesses of memory and pulling from our life experiences, especially if we've owned them. We've owned them. We're not trying to avoid them. And coming back to that prefrontal cortex where empathy resides and helping us to feel. Yes, feel what that person is experiencing. You can trust that gut feeling, your intuition, and ask a question. Now, is there a possibility that when you're in somebody's world, you might ask a question, and it might not be the perfect question? when that happened, do you ever happens? Do you ever feel this way? And they might say, well, no, not exactly. Well, your intuition has guided you to this spot. Trust it. Well, then share with me how it works for you. Lean in. You begin to discover you weren't too far off. Now, when we're in somebody's world and we're listening and we're asking questions, we're not trying to sell anything at this point. There's no salesmanship going on. This is exciting because all the nervousness you've had about what do I say and how do I present it and what do I do next and do I have enough product knowledge, all of that was left at the door. You didn't even bring it in with you. Your sole mission at this moment in the process is to understand. Understand where this person is. In understanding, I should say, until they know that you know where they are. Don't shortcut the process by saying, I know where you are. Yeah, I know where you are. Yeah, I know how you feel. If we know how they feel, let us ask a question that demonstrates that we know. And if we don't know the question, we really don't yet know where they are. We just think that we do. This is that thought process that wants to speed everything up and get to the close. We're not even talking about product yet. We don't even know if this person needs what we have at this point. All we want to do is create a safe place. Now, I want to emphasize this point. Some people say, well, this is too warm and fuzzy. No. As you get to know this person, you may discover they're a rattlesnake and you don't want to do business with them or may not want to be a friend with them. It's possible. And when we're stepping into someone's world, we're not manipulating them. We truly want to create a safe place. There are some things that we do want to share. They're back there in our agenda bags that we left on the porch. But right now, we want to create a place that's safe enough to be able to have a conversation in the first place. That's all we're doing. There's an old Fram oil filter commercial that says, you can paze me now or you can paze me later. This old mechanic was talking about, do oil changes or you'll be replacing your transmission. Well, in relationships, we can try to create rapport and go to the close, or we can actually build a relationship. One, it's pretty superficial, will leave you in damage control in the end. Building a relationship, you can find out everything you need to know in the process. Does this take a little bit longer? The answer is absolutely not. It may take a little longer before you start talking about products and seeking to close a sale. But from that point to the end is much shorter. Most people shortcut the beginning and end up in damage control for days and weeks and months. What would you rather do? Get to the close quickly and be in chaos? Or take enough time to actually care about somebody and find out what's really needed in their life? And then propose things based on their need and their budget, solving their problems. I would suggest the latter. Well, now we're in their world. One of the great risks we'll have when we're in this place, there are two of them I want to mention tonight. One, I'm going to make a note here about our stories, and I'm going to talk about context. Context is an interesting one. People ask me all the time, what do I say when I'm here? And I say, just be honest. What's wrong with honesty? We have been in a society that's been in the trickster sales business for a while. There was success because people had credit cards. They didn't have to be as discriminating about their buy. They actually could buy on emotion. Now, people still get their emotions involved in the purchase, but people are far more cautious today, and their antennae are up. I call them the BS antennae. They can see those tricksters coming a mile away, and most of them find it disgusting. So if you've been in that habit of selling that way, you'll certainly want to learn how to do this with intrinsic validation. As we start caring about people, and in this process, we get to be honest. And one of the most important places to be honest is in how we begin a conversation. We might invite a friend to lunch, and they sit down with us, and we really want to tell them about our new business. But we start off with a really broad contextual question. How's your life? And about an hour and 20 minutes into this discussion, we're still stepping into their world, but it's really big. You know, we're off with the horses, we're off with the garden, we're off with the grandchildren, we're everywhere. Everywhere except for where we want to be. And then we have that really awkward moment about hour and 20 in when we say, what I really wanted to talk to you about. How many of us have been in one of those meetings? It's just a little frustrating. Gosh, why don't you just tell me that up front? What I really wanted to talk to you about. Let's not ever get to that space. And the way we avoid that moment is by approaching the beginning differently. We're just going to take it and narrow the context from your whole world to the part of your world I'm interested in knowing about today. The reason why I called you to lunch today is I would like to know your experience with maybe a home-based business or with nutrition or whatever product or service it is that you might be offering. Same rules apply. Baggage and agenda left at the door, but now you're in their world asking empathetic questions, discovering wonderful things about them, but within the boundaries or context of the desired discussion. That's the reward for honesty. Now, someone may say, I'm not interested in anything like that. Say, great. Tell me about your life and have an enjoyable lunch together. But let's put it in its proper perspective and sequence. Another one is when we call somebody on a telephone and we're stepping into their world. It is so awkward to have someone call who hasn't talked to you for a long time, and they try to play like nothing's changed, and so good to talk to you and tell me about your kids. And about a half hour into the phone, they say, you know, the reason why I called was, oh, what would happen if we just started it that way? I am in a new business. I'm so excited about what's happening. I've made a list of the 5 most influential people I know who could have tremendous impact on society. You're one of them. May I ask you a couple of questions? And we ask a question, answer to which we step into their world. And we stay in their world. So we want to keep the context of the conversation both as narrow as possible and as honest as possible. Second, I mentioned this one briefly last week, but it's worthy of another moment or two, because it happens to me all the time. I know it happens to you. We're listening to someone. We really care. We're spending some time listening. And all of a sudden, they say something about an event in their life. And we've had a similar event. Matter of fact, we might even have had a cooler event. You know, one of those I Trump you events. And we want so badly to tell them our story. Cardinal sin. We are in their world. This is about them. If we have an excitement around something that was similar, we ought to know a question we can ask. Now, there are some times I want to share with you an exception. I've never lost a mate. I don't know what it's like. I've got a good friend who did. And he was talking to another person who just had. And he shared with them that he had lost his wife recently to cancer. And it helped put the situation at peace. There are some things. Or a story for the purpose of putting someone at ease is appropriate. You'll know the difference sharing this for a purpose, to assist them, not to get all excited about me, about my story. So let's keep our context narrow. Let's avoid as much as we can telling our stories. And let's listen. And as we do, and people share, they become increasingly comfortable. Walls come down. They will also most likely, and on many occasions, share the very information you'd like to know. I want to give you the last rule for tonight in principle number 4, creating a safe place. And here it is. When you think you really do know, and you can feel that the walls have come down, and you know that they know, that you know where they are, ask one more question. Just one more. It's been my experience that it is that last question that reveals often as much as you've learned in the entire conversation to this very moment. Had that very experience today in an assessment debrief. Very interesting. Just when you're ready, it's time. One more question. Well, let's move to principle number 5. We now have walls are down. We've created a safe place. We're having a rich and wonderful conversation with this person. And we discover some things we really would like to share. This next principle, I just put in about a year ago, maybe a year and a half ago, because I watched a pattern. I was guilty of this. When I wanted to share something, I had a hard time distinguishing between something I wanted to say and something they really needed to hear. Because we have those thought processes that need to be right. I certainly have them. Got to fix. And we want to be able to distinguish between something we feel strongly about saying and something they desperately need. I was pondering this for a number of days. And I had a dream. And in this dream, I was on the top of a mountain talking to a man who was in an emotional prison. That's why I've been still. He couldn't leave. He was in an emotional prison. And I stepped into his world. Walls came down. Created a safe place. And when he felt comfortable, he pointed down the mountain to the shoreline and to this little bay and said, "My sailboat's right down there. Can you see it?" It's quite a ways down. I could see it. He said, "Would you move this sailboat to a safe harbor?" And I remember saying, I'll do that. Yeah, I'll do that. Well, I went down, took a sailboat, moved it from harbor to harbor, and I remember this one harbor. I was both sitting on the bow and on the stern. Now, you could do that in dreams. I rolled off the bow backwards, splashed in the water. It was crystal clear, beautiful. It's about a 40-foot sailboat. And I remember having this thought. If this were my boat, this is where I would put it. I could feel it in the fibers of my being. So I returned back up the mountain. So I came up the trail and I approached him and he saw me coming. I saw him instantly relax. There was something about my countenance that was impacting him. Well, what we do know is that in our amygdala, that fight or flight center in our brain, there's an overabundance of what we call mirror neurons, mirror, mirror on the wall. And they're like a highly developed radar system. And they read our body language, the tone of our voice, etc. It's mostly visual. And I'm going to read to you right out of scroll number 2 because it's interesting how Og talks about this. Those mirror neurons fire at twice the speed of a normal neuron. That's really fast. They fire, and they release chemicals in the body before we have a conscious thought. we're actually feeling before we have a thought. Isn't that interesting? This is a very highly developed radar system. So when we meet someone, when we talked earlier about saying to them silently and to myself, I love you, Og says this, he said, though spoken in silence, these words will shine in my eyes and wrinkle my brow, bring a smile to my eyes, unwrinkle my brow, bring a smile to my lips, and echo in my voice. And his heart will be opened. That's what I felt. I felt his heart opening. And when I finally got in front of him, I shared with him what I had done with his sailboat. And I explained the harbor and why I had selected it. And he was pleased. I know that I was too. I knew, again, in the fiber of my being, that I had served him well. That his sailboat truly was in a safe place. And I woke up. I'm lying in bed and I'm going, wow, that was vivid. What did that mean? And the impression I got was this. His sailboat represented his dream. He was in an emotional prison. He was incapable of moving his own dream to a safe place. He didn't know how to do it or to send it. But he knew that I could. He trusted me. You see, when we create a safe place, we create trust. And as Stephen R. Mark Covey says in his book, The Speed of Trust, that the speed with which things happen is in direct relationship to the trust. The higher the trust, the faster the speed. He trusted me, and I was worthy of his trust. I wrote this into the coaching curriculum, wondering if people would think I was just wacky for having this crazy dream. But those who have practiced this piece have been richly rewarded. Because when we know in the fiber of our being that what we're about to share will truly bless that person's life, their mirror neurons know it too. They are at peace. They are more open to what we're about to share. So let us try on. That's the principle five. Try on someone's dream. Let's try it on and see if we would do. If we were in their shoes, in their circumstances, financially, emotionally, would we want this advice? Would it serve us? If so, we're ready for principle number six. In principle number six, we determine if this is the right time. Timing. The principle is timing. Sometimes, it's not. Sometimes all that person needed to do was hear us, connect with us, create a friend. Sometimes people are absolutely open right now to hear what we have to share. We don't want to be impatient. If we have built a bridge, we can reestablish this relationship tomorrow or the day after. And I know in traditional sales, you know, there's some statistics about you let the customer go, the chances of getting them back are very slim. You got to close them right then. And I smile and say, well, let me tell you the rest of that story. If we've hammered on them, beat them up, use clever sales techniques, pass them from one salesperson to the next person to the next person, when they finally leave, their sanity is restored. Yes, their sanity is restored. And they feel this tremendous sense of relief. Why would anybody ever subject themselves to that abuse ever again? That statistic was developed primarily in that kind of a circumstance. If you can't beat them up enough to close them now, you'll never get to close them. And I say, what would happen if instead you stepped into their world, created a safe place, took down their walls of resistance, and what you're going to recommend truly serves them, and it's the right time, and so you decide to share. What would that be like? What would it be like to say to someone, do you make decisions like this now, in the now, or do you prefer to sleep on it? I really like to sleep on it. Good, then you should. Can I see you tomorrow morning at 11 o'clock or tomorrow afternoon at 1? Which would work best for you? I'll think about this as well. Then we get back together. The very first question we ask is, since we were together yesterday afternoon, what thoughts have you had? Now, if they say, well, I'm a little nervous about the finances, don't jump in. Step into the world. Share with me. Help me understand. And we get to start stepping back into their world, taking down those walls of resistance, trying on our advice again, checking the right timing. If it's the right time, we move to principle number 7, which is gaining agreement. Gaining agreement is asking permission to share. If it's the right time, and we know what we want to share is going to serve them. Whatever we say, it should have this kind of energy. Would you be willing to step into my world? And let me share with you an idea or two that might serve you. Now, don't use those words exactly, but that's the energy. The visual is you're sitting in their world. You're going to take them by the arm, step outside their world, pick up your agenda, walk across the bridge into your world. They're going to sit down, you're going to sit down with them, and you're going to begin to share. If they say yes, proceed. If they say no, don't. No is not no forever. It's just no, not right now. But we could turn no into never by how we handle it. How would you like to approach it going forward? Well, I'm just a little tight right now or concerned about this. When do you see this being resolved? Would it be all right if I touch base with you on a weekly basis, or would you prefer monthly? By email or by phone? If we have an exceptional offer come in, would you like to know about it? We're here to serve them. We sometimes are myopic, which means short-sighted. We only see the moment and the commission check for today and the mortgage that's due tomorrow. 3 months from now, you'll still have a mortgage payment. 3 months from now, you'll still need a customer. You can burn this bridge, or you can keep building it. And when the time comes, they'll walk in and buy from you. Those are our options. Now, if they say yes and you begin to share, one of the most common things that happens, if we've stepped into the world and we truly know where they are, much of this will have been addressed in the conversation. But they may have an objection. An objection is a door. What do we do with doors? Yes, we step into them. We ask a question. See, objections are not questions that demand answers. Objections are comments that demand a question. How many times have you heard, well, here are the answers to objections. Answers to objections. These are statements. They're not demanding an answer. They're demanding a question. Let us ask a question. Now, some people say to me, yes, but they're going to give you objections that just to end the conversation. It's really an excuse. And I smile and say, then it's time for us to perfect this art. Because if you're this deep into a conversation, they're trying to get out of it, it might suggest that we missed a piece or two. Just think about that. But if we really have cared, and they ask, or they state an objection, let's ask a question. Well, I just can't sell, or if you're in a business of recruiting people, well, share with me your greatest fear. What are some of your experiences? Tell me more about that. How long have you been dealing with this? what does this cost you? How long do you want to hang on to it? Can you hear the questions? You really want to help them work through their own objection. May I assist you? If you have truly honored them, you can ask, what's it been like to talk to me? Now, in most sales situations where this kind of connection occurs, are not transactional in nature. A transaction is when someone walks into a store, buys milk, pays money, and leaves with the milk. Most sales that involve this kind of a relationship are relationship sales. In other words, when it comes time to make a decision, it's not a close. The question is, are you ready to begin? Are you ready to begin? You shared with me what you're looking for. I'm sharing with you the solutions that I have for that purpose. I am here to work with you. Are you ready to begin? We don't close these sales. They're not transactions. They're beginnings. Well, those are the seven principles of intrinsic validation. We look for the good. We look for what's important to people. Then we verbalize it. Then we listen for doors and step into those doors. We create a safe place where there's no need for walls. We try on our advice before we share it. We check on timing. Is this the right time to share it? And lastly, we gain agreement to share. And if we're in a sales situation, it's not a close. It's a beginning. Well, this week, I'd like you to practice stepping into people's worlds and just listening. Now, some of you have thought processes that want to do everything perfectly. Let me ask you this question. When was the last time someone cared enough about you to step into your world and truly listen, to understand you without needing to fix you? When was the last time that happened? Just ponder for a moment. I've asked that question thousands of times, and rarely is the answer of, well, this person, that person, is usually the answer. Point being this. No matter how poorly you do this at first, it may be the very best intrinsic validating experience that person may have ever had. The instant you ask, well, tell me more about that, or I'm listening, you step into their world, you've heard the door. Once you do that, you've stepped into rarefied territory. This is the greatest secret of success. Caring enough about a person to unconditionally step into their world and find out what's really important to them. I'll do this week. Your assignment is also to read scroll number 2 3 times a day. Now, I want to close with this thought tonight. I've been working on chapter 8 of the book. It's entitled Joy in the Journey. We'll get to it in a few weeks. I've been writing about some experiences in my life. Something became so profound this week, and I'd like to share it with you. In the context of studying your scrolls, our bodies, our tangible bodies, go with us everywhere we go. We go to sleep with them, wake up with them, we eat with them, we recreate with them, we work with them, we play with them. They are there always. The question is, where is our mind? Where is it? Is it, as Og says in Scroll 5, in the past, tormenting myself over past failures and aches of the heart? Is it in the future, trying to put tomorrow's gold in today's purse with fantasy, trying to do tomorrow's work while standing in today's path? Is it tormenting myself over things that may never come to pass, that I may never witness? Where is our mind? We're going to begin a process this week with reading scroll number 2. And that is having our mind and our body in the same place 3 times a day for 4.5 minutes. That's it. We're going to pick up the scroll and intentionally read it and be present, listening to it, seeking for meaning as we read. As we meet people, let us be conscious, our mind and our body in the same place. Silently and to ourselves, let us say, I love you. Let that wrinkle in our brow leave, that smile on our face. Let them see we're safe. Let us step into people's worlds and take down walls of resistance. Let us have our mind and our body in the same place. It is only when they are that we are in creation. And it is only when we're in creation that we experience joy. And one of the greatest examples in all of the principles we teach is when that wall comes down and the cooperation and productivity floods out. May you have the courage to do this week. Read the scroll. Step into people's worlds. Silently into yourself, say, I love you. Have a great week, because next week we're going to take on our thought processes. Those 8 ways in which we can think. 3 that are terribly destructive. 5 that are very constructive and result in inspired ideas and impressions that ignite our passion. We are going to want to know how to use our gifts to ignite passion instead of fantasy and catastrophe and confusion and overwhelm and despair. Be excited to be back with you next Tuesday night. Until then, have a glorious and wonderful week. Good night, everyone.